Welcome to our latest episode, Cracking the Code, Strategies for Small Group Literacy Instruction with Sean Toy. We're thrilled to have Sean with us, an Orton-Gillingham certified K-3 reading intervention teacher, bringing a wealth of insights to the table. Before we dive into the world of small group literacy instruction, Sean, could you take a moment to introduce yourself to our listeners, share a bit about your background, your journey as an educator, and what fuels your passion for literacy instruction?
Yeah, so hi, I'm Sean Toy. This is my 10th year of teaching. So my first 4 years I spent teaching kindergarten, and then I spent the next 4 years teaching first grade. And then last year I made the move to a title small group reading intervention position, which I love. So I've worked in the same school district this whole time, which is awesome because I get to meet siblings and, you know, get to know the kids. And I really just love teaching reading. I love making that connection with them, getting to know them more, and just spending that one-on-one instruction time with them.
Yeah. And you are working with kindergarten and first grade, I feel like, are some of the best grades to work with because you get to see that growth, right? They're such foundational and important years in the literacy journey, and being able to work with students and see that growth both in kindergarten and first grade, I think, is like some of the best, best times. I think back to teaching, those were the best grades, but also can be the trickiest to teach, right?
Oh, yeah.
I always say kindergarten teachers are special. Like I think that's the hardest grade. You get
them
coming in and they need a lot of learning in a lot of different ways. So thinking about the classroom instruction and having that whole group, thinking through the needs of a whole group, and now having that opportunity to really drill down and focus on literacy and plan that small group instruction, I would love to hear a little bit more about how you go about identifying the students who may benefit from that small group instruction, maybe thinking about what kind of assessments you use in addition to maybe observations, anecdotal data, and how that guides your selection process.
Yeah, so our district uses Acadience as our screener for all of our students. We also use the STAR online assessment. So we take both of those things into consideration. And then we also do the core phonics survey to get some more data on, you know, specific areas that we need to target. So those are really the big ones. And then also getting some more phonemic awareness data. So I love using, for my purposes, the Hegarty assessment just to see, you know, what I really need to pinpoint with them.
I love that you mentioned multiple types of assessments, right? So we've recently been talking quite a bit about small group instruction and really how we can make sure that it's targeted and that we're meeting the needs of our learners. And Acadience is a great universal screener, right? Gives us a little bit of that. I always call it our check engine light. We're administering that to all of our students. Some students pop up and we know we need to learn a little bit more. And that's, you know, the core phonics survey, or let me dig into their phonemic awareness and understand a little bit more about that. So when you're grabbing that information, I think, you know, teachers would love to hear, how are you looking through that data? How are you sorting that data? How's that really, you know, guiding your planning process?
Yeah. So, looking at the different kinds of data, when we look at Acadience, you know, we look at first grade, we look at, you know, do they have their letter names and sounds in order? Because that's our foundational piece. You know, without that, we can't move forward with any other type of instruction until they have that solid. So that's one of the biggest pieces. And then, of course, the phonemic awareness piece. They also need to be able to orally, you know, segment and blend before we can then move forward, you know, with the written part. And then looking at just the core phonics survey specifically for older grades, we also look at the syllable types, you know, what syllable types do they have a full grasp on? What do they need more instruction with? So that really helps me break down, you know, where to target that instruction and where that kid is, where we need to meet them, you know, to meet their needs.
And so when you're planning that instruction and using that data to kind of, you know, form your groups, how fluid then are your groups? Because I think that is one of the trickiest parts, right? About pulling small groups, I think back to when I was a reading specialist and you're trying to think about schedules and how this works with the students that have the same needs. Are you kind of on a rigid schedule where it's like, oh, it's every 4 to 6 weeks? Or are your groups more fluid where it's like, okay, we're working on alphabet knowledge, but you know what? These three kiddos, they've got this now. we're kind of moving them out and moving some other students in.
Yeah, so at the beginning of the year, we definitely had some movement while we, you know, were getting to know the students. So we had that baseline data, but then as the school year kind of progressed a little bit, you know, into September, October, teachers got a better understanding of which kids, okay, they just needed a little bit of support to get back on track, or which ones really are needing that, really that additional support. So there was a little bit of movement. Right now, everything's pretty solid, but after Christmas break, we typically, you know, kind of reevaluate where things are at the midpoint and then bring in new or exit other kids.
And so as you're looking at that kind of midpoint, are you looking at the same type of data when you're making those decisions? Is there anything else you're considering that now that you've had the opportunity, as you said, to work with the small groups, right? In the beginning, you might not know the students. You're just kind of using some assessment data, but does that look different as you've had your groups and you're able to work with them?
Yeah, so the actual assessments will be the same. So we give the core, you know, three times a year. So we see how they've progressed through the syllable types, the letter names and sounds. We look at their PA, phonemic awareness. We do Acadience again, and then STAR will also have another benchmarking window. So all of that, and then plus, you know, classroom teachers give input. How are they progressing in their tier one instruction? And if we're both seeing growth, then we kind of talk about, okay, is this kid ready, you know, for some, or do they need additional support? Are they kind of ready to be let go a little bit from that? So,
yeah. And I love that you mentioned that, because I think it's so important. Assessments do give us so much information, but that conversation with the classroom teacher, making sure that we're discussing what's happening, what are we noticing, what are those observations, because that's really where that application comes in, right? Like, I might have a student, I can think of so many students, and I'm sure you can, that if I'm teaching a skill in isolation, they're great. And then when we're going to decode a word, it's like, that skill is not even something they're thinking about. And, you know, they're not actually applying those blending skills to decoding. So ensuring that we're looking at what students are actually transferring to both their reading and their writing. So small group instruction can, you know, we know it's powerful. We know how beneficial it is, but it also can be pretty challenging, right? As a classroom teacher, just planning your own small group instruction, or working with a variety of classrooms and working with a variety of learners. Can you speak to maybe some of those challenges that arise in planning and working with small groups and how you overcome those?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things right now that I think a lot of teachers would probably see is just the sicknesses that are going around. So we have a lot of kids absent. So one that affects, you know, the instruction they're missing out on because they're not here. But then if they're missing a day where we're introducing something, then that challenge is, oh, I have to then introduce it to them when they come back and kind of play that catch-up game. So that's definitely one of the hardest things to figure out how to manage is, you know, if a student misses day one of a new concept, how do I then fill in the gaps there? And then another thing that my district in particular has are a lot of English language learners. So what that brings then is the background knowledge that they might not have about some things that we're learning about. So filling in those gaps there, building vocabulary with them is huge. So those are, I think, some of the biggest things that we face in our small group instruction.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned that English language learner piece and building vocabulary and building background knowledge. I think often when we think about small group instruction, and I was guilty of this when I, you know, first started teaching and even moving into a reading specialist role, of always just kind of thinking about the phonemic awareness, the phonics, and the decoding and that application piece. But we can't forget about those other components that are absolutely critical to reading, right? That oral language is the foundation that everything else is built upon. And if our students are English language learners, or perhaps, you know, maybe not an English language learner, but a student that's coming to us with low vocabulary, they didn't have a lot of language in their home, how are we focusing and building that background knowledge and that vocabulary, which I feel like is really tricky, right? Because we can talk and we can name a bunch of assessments. We can name Acadience and core phonics and phonemic awareness assessments. Do you use anything, or how are you kind of guiding that understanding of what the need is for vocabulary or for oral language?
We don't have a specific assessment at this time for that, which I wish we did. And that's something that we've talked about, you know, like I'm still in my OG training for my advanced training this year. And that's something that we talk about, you know, how do we get to the comprehension? Like, is there a vocabulary list that they should know? And there really is no black and white answer. But I think the best way is just to kind of gauge their prior knowledge when we're reading about something, kind of get a feel for it and then see, do I need to, you know, add in some pictures or maybe a short video before to give them a true understanding? And something else I really like to do is just a pair text. So one of the Hegarty books that, you know, the first one, The Big Red Hat, is about the beach. So, you know, pairing that with then a nonfiction passage or something that could be read to them just to build a little bit of background knowledge about the place or whatever the topic might be, I think is a great way to do that.
Yeah, I love that. And I think all students can benefit from that as well, right? So kind of thinking through building that background knowledge. I love the idea of using, you know, videos as well and kind of sharing and helping them see and build that background knowledge as well. As we think about some of the, we talked a little bit about the challenges. I would love to hear a little bit about some of your successes. You know, maybe you can think of specific groups or specific students that have really moved along and progressed by having this opportunity for this small group time.
Yeah. So in terms of the challenges with, you know, being absent and then making up, you know, that lost time, I think always I have my students that were there kind of do some rereading at the table, maybe of the passage from the day before, or we keep everything in a folder that we've read. So giving them just a chance to kind of reread or partner read for a little bit while I'm able to then, you know, fill in the student that was not here just to kind of get everybody on the same page. So the rest are still reading and I'm able to provide that quick one-on-one catch up with a student who might have been absent. So that has, I think, has been okay. In terms of the English language learners, like I said, the just providing that background knowledge for them, pictures, anything visual has been really helpful, especially with third grade students that I work with and state testing, like that is a big thing. They might have to read a really long passage and they don't know anything about the topic. So I think just being able to build that for them is going to be really, really helpful.
Oh, that's great. I've been, you know, I checked out your Instagram page and I've seen all of the amazing things you're doing and you're building for your small groups. I'd love for you to walk us through just what a lesson could look like with one of your small groups.
Yeah. So every lesson starts with phonemic awareness, which is my, you know, favorite thing to do. So I like to usually focus on one or two skills, and it's just a couple minutes. So I don't go through the whole, you know, the whole entire Hegarty lesson.
Yeah. And I love that you said that. I'm just going to kind of, that is exactly the way I always like to share. That's exactly the way it should be for small group, right? When we're teaching tier one whole group, we're teaching the whole lesson, meeting a variety of learners' needs. But absolutely, when we're pulling small groups, we want to be really targeted, focusing on just a couple of skills. Just a nice, quick oral and auditory warm-up.
Yeah. So I love Bridge the Gap for that reason, because it's so targeted that it's just simple to implement. So we always start with that. And then my next thing is, you know, like a visual, like a letter sound drill with them, which is just like a minute or so of targeted sounds. And then a blending drill where we just build a few words containing the sound. So if I'm teaching like digraphs, for example, I want to make sure I include that. The next step is some type of a multi-sensory word work piece. So either magnetic boards, whiteboards, word chaining. I don't know. I have like a million hands-on things I feel like that I do with them.
I know. I was, like I said, I was looking at your Instagram. I was like, oh my goodness, these are such amazing ideas and so engaging.
Yeah. So like word mapping, I don't know, Play-Doh, there's just a million things. So I like to switch up, you know, that piece. So it's either they're either writing the words or they're decoding them like a roll and read, just something quick and targeted for what is going to be connected then to the connected text, which is our next step. So that's either reading a decodable book or a passage. And that's where most of our time is spent in the lesson, building fluency, lots of opportunities for rereading. Highlighting the words that are the targeted skill, maybe some partner reading, scooping, And then I usually will do some type of a writing extension, not every day, but usually like every other day to go with the passage. So a word sort or like the books, I love that the books have the questions included in the back. I think that makes it so easy to just, you know, pick one and have them do some writing with it. So.
Yes, I love that. I mean, that is such a great, and you have all of those components in there, right? That warm up, and I love that you said, you know, most of our time is spent on the actual reading of the decodable book or the decodable passage. And we know when we think about the opportunity to pull a small group and to work with them, that application piece is the most important time. And getting to hear them read and kind of see what are they doing when they're reading the text as well. I love that you were able to share some of the ideas for that warm up. I know you talked a little bit about, you know, blending, just some activities. Something I saw when I was just looking through your Instagram, which I think many of us are familiar with blending lines. Those are really helpful, a great way to kind of target the sound that we're focusing, blend those words. But I love the way you had them read down and then you have them read back up for fluency. Can you speak a little bit about like your, the directions or the instructions that you give them? Kind of, I think a lot of times when we're in this transitional phase or that more emergent phase of reading and we're teaching students to say the sounds and blend them together, I know a lot of times we have some kiddos that really struggle to then say, oh my goodness, I don't have to actually say every sound and blend it together. I can actually decode this word the fast way. I could do this quickly.
Yeah, so this is actually something I learned through my Orton Gillingham training, and it's part of every lesson too. So we do it in the review word part there, but I transfer that to all of my small groups with the targeted words. So I have them code first. So marking, whatever their tier one instruction does for marking is what I have them do. So like we would underline, you know, the digraph in each word, for example. So as they go down, it's a little slower because they're coding and they're really maybe processing each word for the accuracy piece first. And then they will read the list then back up again for that fluency part. So after they've done that a few times, the kids get pretty used to, you know, when I'm done reading down, I don't say that I'm done or sit there. I know that I then read back up again. So it just builds that fluency a little more. Yeah.
I think that's helpful too, because even within a small group, you probably have some kiddos that are like, they're done while some might still be decoding. So I maybe can read back up two times while I'm waiting for everyone else to have the opportunity to finish.
Yes.
As we wrap up our discussion, is there one valuable takeaway that teachers can apply to enhance their small group literacy instruction based on the insights and strategies that you've shared in this episode?
So I think the biggest takeaway, and that has been eye-opening for me leaving the classroom for, you know, a small group position, is just knowing, like meeting the kids where they are. So you really have to meet them like where their needs are. And that doesn't always look like what tier one instruction is in terms of the concept. So, and this is especially true for my older students. So what they're learning in tier one is not necessarily what my small group target is going to be, because we're working on filling those gaps in that they don't have. So I think the biggest thing for teachers is to just figure out where the gaps are. You know, figure out, are the foundational pieces in place, or are we missing things that's breaking down that comprehension later and filling in those gaps? So that might look a little different from what you're teaching in your whole group lesson. You might have to change it up, what you're teaching in small group. Just one other thing to add that would be a great takeaway here is just to remember that science of reading or structured literacy is not just phonics, which I think a lot of times is still kind of what we think of. But it's so much more than that, you know, like it can be fun. And it's also including that vocabulary and the writing and the spelling and the comprehension. So all of those things are going to lead to that skilled reading piece that we want from our students. So just another takeaway.
Yeah, and I love that you said that. That is so important, as we have such robust conversations about those foundational skills, because we know how important they are. All of the skills are important, and we need to remember that science of reading isn't just phonics. So thank you for adding that. Also, I think we have this conversation a lot as we look at standards, right? I've had so many people say, well, I'm teaching second grade, but there isn't phonemic awareness. We don't have phonemic awareness standards. We don't, because ideally, like you said, you know, you wouldn't need to teach this in second grade, but if our students are missing these foundational skills, we absolutely have to fill in the gaps with those foundational skills. So small group time is such a phenomenal opportunity to do that and really meet students where they are at. And we are so grateful to you, Sean, for sharing your insights today. We really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for our upcoming episodes where we explore literacy topics in a snack-sized, easily digestible format.